This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
Technology Bites without Jay.
Yeah.
The party is on.
So now what do we do?
All right,
yeah, that's
go,
the hard
Peter.
Part. No, I can give out the info.
Well, say who we are. Start us off. We're so helpless.
We want this party started, right?
Okay, yes, you all are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
See, all you have to do is say the I'm in your name, and it just starts the ball rolling. The main info is, to go to our website is www.geekradio.com. Let's see, to call in on the show is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT if you like translating the whole alphabet to your, to the numbers on your phone thing. During the show, we use the IRC, which even if you don't know what that is, you can go to the website and use our web-based IRC chat.
IRC stands for Internet Relay Chat.
That's right. Click on the acronym and you'll get the translation.
That's right. And that is the so-called show within a show, also known as the uncensored, you can say anything you want because it's not over the airwaves and the FCC doesn't care show. Let's see, Jay is not here, as you've pretty much noticed from, say the theme music on. He's out of town, but there are people at his house, so don't view that as an opportunity to go and take his,
Jay's residence is.
Since you've listened to the show, then you also know that Jay doesn't upgrade his equipment very often. So unless you're getting his camera, which he always has with him, you're pretty much out of luck. Just for those of you who are.
Yeah, because he's got that old car.
No, that might be worth taking.
Maybe you make a group house about to head over to Jay's place about 10:30 tonight and just hold down the fort. Make sure no one comes over.
Or just take what's left.
Part it out from the driveway. Huh?
And Groove House and Jennifer the intern are also here. Peter wouldn't know that because Peter's actually not here, even though he's on the air.
That's true. See, notice, I can be hundreds of miles away, and yet I can make the show. But Jay is busy. Jay is busy having some sort of junket to, I think, did he said where he was going, right?
He's somewhere in Florida.
He's in Florida. Yeah. So he's at Disney World. He's on Space Mountain right now.
He's always
while the rest
on Space
of us
Mountain.
Work bringing good radio to all of the valuable listeners of Technology Bites.
Well, you know, he muttered as he walked out the door last week as he kind of stumbled down the stairs, you know, with his twitches and facial tics. He muttered that he may call in. And so, you know, we could end up having Jay whether we want him or not.
As if he would remember.
That's true.
But it doesn't matter because Groove doesn't have to take his call. We don't have to take his call on the
right,
air.
That's right.
If we just skip the line.
Exactly.
Plus, but, you know, there's also, I don't know, where was I going with it? I don't remember now. Sorry. Yeah, the show's... Oh, well, actually, that's where I was going. The podcast...
You forget the point, so you don't have to.
Last week, there was no... The server was not archiving the shows, and I don't know if that's been corrected or not.
Oh,
we
that
probably
was the,
should check
KPFT.
That before we really rag on Jay a lot, so that we can either save it till he's there to hear it, or else say stuff that you don't want him to ever hear.
He's probably sitting in his rental car somewhere in Florida, banging his fist on the steering wheel, wishing that the battery in his cell phone had not run out.
Or he's sitting in his hotel room monitoring us over the
and taking
the
meticulous
streaming.
Notes.
Filling out his enemies list.
That's right. That's right.
I have, you know, over 11 years, what are 12 years of check marks on mine.
Yeah, luckily you're going to go first. If you drop, I'm out of Houston like that.
Of course, I'm far away, so if something happens to me, it might take a few days for the word to get back.
That's why we're monitoring Flicted,
right.
Too.
That's right. We're all going to go move in with Art Bell in Pahrump, Nevada. So. You know, here in the studio, sitting on a piece of paper next to my chair when I came in, is written... In red.
Block letters.
In block letters, the word evil, exclamation point, and someone has carefully torn the I out of the word evil, so it just now says evil. And I'm not quite sure what this means, but at least it's at my chair.
So. That wasn't baited for the Evil Dwight thing?
That
I've always been kind of curious as to the origin of Evil Dwight. Is there a Dwight with a bizarro mustache running around? Or like, how does that pander out? How does that pan out?
How does that pander out?
How does that pander to Evil Dwight?
That's right.
Overlord.
That's right. No, actually, that was Kerry O'Connor, who writes the blog Mimo. Gave me that name. We have this when we were doing our blogs on another software. It had a drop down for that showed everybody's byline. You kind of went down, you chose a byline, and I accidentally put my byline on her blog entry and published it. And, you know, it was, I mean, frankly, it wasn't the kind of thing I'd want my name on, but she thought I was just being evil, and so since then she has called me Evil Dwight, and that's kind of the origin of that. And, you know, people who know me know that I'm anything but evil. So, it has stuck, and actually it's now been shortened to E. Dwight, like, and so now some people think it's like Electronica Dwight, or, you know.
Well, that's better, because... The whole Evil Dwight, now, so those of you who haven't seen Dwight in person, it's just like Star Trek. The one with the beard is the evil. No way.
The dark beard.
Yeah, that.
And the red eyes.
That one hasn't been around for about 20 years.
Yeah, we got a bunch of listeners out there going, what?
What?
Captain Picard never had a beard. And
actually,
then
there
now there's a whole other generation who are like, Captain Janeway, I know she never had a beard.
She just waxed hers.
Well, that's why they canceled Voyager, actually.
All right. Well, I think
the only episode they hadn't done was the Evil Voyager episode.
I think, Peter, you do have news, right?
I do, actually. If Flicted pushes the button, then we can keep staggering along on the awkward path of tonight's show.
Okay, I'm going to try to do that and see if Monomana plays again. It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, here, so, you know, the past few weeks I've given you the various threatening news about, you know, email attacks and vulnerabilities and so on. Well, no, you don't get a break this time. Trend Micro, a security firm, these people, I'll preface the whole story by this. The people that make these announcements make money off of the fact that there's an issue. Now, that doesn't make them more or less accurate. It just means they do have a dog in this fight. So just keep that in mind as you read these things, that the reason there's a press release is because they want to, you know, generate sales for usually some product that addresses the issue that the story's about. But that doesn't mean the story's not correct. Apparently, users can expect more cyber attacks to originate from the web than via email by next year. Email's traditionally been the top means of attack, with messages laden with Trojan horses and other malicious programs hitting inboxes. But the balance is about to tip as cyber crooks increasingly turn to the web to attack PCs. In a sort of related story, there was actually a MacBook that was hacked in a competition, and they loosened the rules. They had this contest and nobody could hack it, and then they loosened the rules so that you could exploit through the web, you know, a malformed web page, and then access through Safari from the Mac browser, you know, the Mac machine, and that was how the hack was done. So the person who managed to successfully do this won like $10,000 and the MacBook that he hacked. So that, you know, it's not just a PC thing. The reason for the flip is simple. Security tools for email have become commonplace, but the same is not true for web traffic. Security firms have found it tough to secure what comes into a network and computers over port 80, the network port used to browse the web using the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, or HTTP. That's what that HTTP :// thing is at the front of your URLs. You can't block port 80, said Eva Chen, Trend Micro's chief executive, in an interview. It is different than email. Email is store and forward. HTTP is real time, and you need to be able to deal with the latency and the user experience. In other words, that pause, you know, when you click a web page, when you get an email, it goes to the server, and it usually has sat there for some period of time where it can be analyzed before you get it. Or if they take the time to analyze it, you don't notice. But with web pages, they can't make it wait. Let's see. In a recent example of web threats, miscreants broke into the Dolphin Stadium website and rigged it to load malicious software onto Windows PCs. The incident happened just before the Super Bowl was to be held at the stadium. So you can't even count on the whole, you know, staying away from flaky sites or you know, bad parts of the web. So it is the part of the classic rat race between security firms and cyber crooks. This has spawned an underground market for security vulnerabilities. Many of the bugs offered will let an attacker silently commandeer a PC through the web when the unsuspecting user hits a site that packs an exploit, so-called drive-by installations. Criminals are offering up to $75,000 for a Windows XP vulnerability and $50,000 for a Windows Vista vulnerability. Isn't that interesting? I guess because the installed base of XP is larger. Security firms like VeriSign's iDefense and 3Com's Tipping Point pay around $12,000. So while the good guys are paying, the bad guys are paying more. Of course, if you sell the bad guys the one and get 75 G's and then get $12,000 for selling it to the good guys, maybe. Never mind. I don't know any exploits, so I'm not at risk of cashing in on it. So, they are going to offer products. Trend Micro, and you know, there's the payoff for them on this press release or on this article. They're getting ready to launch an updated version of its security product for corporate desktops that includes a new web security feature. The new technology sends every web query to a Trend Micro data center and will block access to known malicious sites. Doesn't that make you feel comfortable? If Trend Micro doesn't know the site, the company will scan it. And another, at least bad news for somebody else, that, you know, people's BlackBerries weren't working part of the day last week when we had the show. Well, they issued on Friday an official statement to explain why there was a significant problem. According to the company, many of its North American customers experienced delays sending and receiving messages over a period of about half a day. Basically, here's the statement, or the first part of the statement. RIM has determined that the incident was triggered by the introduction of a new non-critical system routine that was designed to provide better optimization of the system's cache. The system routine was expected to be non-impacting with respect to the real-time operation of the BlackBerry infrastructure, but the pre-testing of the system routine proved to be insufficient. Now, that's corporate speak. In real speak, it's, we didn't think it was going to hurt nothing, and then we put it on, and it took everything out. But then, even after the problem, and if any of you who have done, like, internet projects or done application project management stuff, as I have, they diagnosed the problem and decided to go over to the backup system. And it says from their statement, although the backup system and failover process had been repeatedly and successfully tested previously, the failover process did not fully perform to RIM's expectations in this situation and therefore caused further delay in restoring service and processing the resulting message queue. So basically, they figured out it was screwed up. They went to plan B, to their backup system, and it didn't work. So finally, RIM apologizes to customers for inconvenience resulting from the service interruption. RIM's root cause analysis and system enhancement process with respect to this incident is ongoing. In other words, we're still trying to figure it out. And RIM has already identified certain aspects of its testing, monitoring, and recovery processes that will be enhanced as a result of the incident and in order to prevent recurrence. That's corporate speak for that. We are whipping the slaves even harder next time. So now you kind of know, if you can translate it into human speak, what was going on. And then here's now we sort of start into the new product stuff. Actually, I'm going to rework this. This one, we were talking about people who, when I talked about the Star Trek with the evil, opposite thing with the beards, about how a lot of our listeners might be too young to remember. Well, some of you may be too young to remember this one either. This past Monday night was the 30th anniversary screening of Star Wars. So it's been 30 years. So 1976, I guess May, presumably they did it the same night, May 25th, 1977, that would be right. Notably missing from the sold-out show were Wookiees and Princess Leia's in metal bikinis. So it was a classy joint. But the fans, though all grown up, were in good company. George Lucas, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and 11 behind-the-scenes collaborators who won or were nominated for Oscars for their contributions to the original Star Wars joined the party hosted by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. That's why there were no, like, stormtrooper brigades and stuff like that. Following the screening of 1997's digital version, the filmmakers took the stage and fielded questions from moderator and Academy Program Coordinator Randy Haberkamp, but he wasn't the only one with questions. Wired News prowled it and got some panel discussion stuff, but there's nothing really, there's nothing to that story. They didn't really follow up on it. So, 30 years though, so if you remember going and seeing Star Wars in that first year, not the digital, although they showed the, notice they mentioned that they showed the 1997 digital version. That's the one where, for those of you who are geekily into this, I believe that's the one where Han didn't shoot first and where there was the other stuff that Lucas changed to, I believe they replaced all of the lightsabers with walkie-talkie. Wait, no, that's E.T. Never mind. Now here's the not new stuff. I mentioned last week that there were some rumors and possibilities of a Zune phone, that Microsoft was going to be trailing Apple, kind of badly copying them, like sort of a lame younger kid trying to act like its big cool brother. Ballmer says no, they're not going to do it. He says, quote, "It's not a concept you'll ever get from us. We're in the Windows Mobile business. We can put Zune into Windows Mobile. We can put Xbox into Windows Mobile. We can pour everything in. we wouldn't define our phone experience just by music. See, this is where he's trying to put the digs in. A phone is really a general-purpose device. You want it to make telephone calls. You want to get and receive messages, text, email, whatever your preference is. You may want music. You may want to play games. You may want to carry your contacts with you, and you may want to pay for things. I think we have to think about the phone instead of as a fixed-function device. A phone is really kind of a general-purpose device that we need to have clean and easy to use, which is, I think that I'll translate that one for you. That means that since it's supposed to be simple and do things in an elegant way, that Ballmer is admitting here that there's no way in hell that Microsoft could possibly accomplish that. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I get from it. So maybe you get a different reading. Now on to the new cool stuff. Dell is going to is now offering an option. If you buy a Latitude D420 sub-notebook, you can switch, and instead of having the hard disk, you can have a 32-gig SanDisk flash drive. The downside for you is that it costs a whopping $550 for the solid-state drive. You can knock off the price of the hard drive you no longer need, of course, but that doesn't reduce the overall cost of the notebook by much. So, but it still is an interesting step forward that that you can now order even a Dell with the that drive, and they're also Dell's also offering it in the semi-rugged D620 ATG notebook. Again, it's aimed at the corporates, I guess, because they're the ones who will pony up the $550 for the 32-gig drive. Dell claimed this drive boosts system performance by up to 23% and decreases startup time by up to 34% compared to the traditional hard drives available with both machines. So it's available in North America now for our European and Asian listeners, and they are out there. It'll be added to the configuration web pages for those two models, quote, soon. And here's one. This is not a joke. That's why I put it sort of in the middle of the of this. You know, it's still April, but it is not April 1st. If they had, that would have been a debacle. If they had released this product, if they had announced this product on April 1st, nobody would have believed it. They would have thought it was a joke. But the George Foreman iGrill, yes, it's for real, the George Foreman iGrill with an iPod dock on it, an iPod-ready grill, has been announced. It's an electric barbecue. It's a stand-up grill. It has a 10-watt speaker set that broadcasts music from a portable music player, while the main 200-square-inch grill cooks food indoors or outside. The iGrill is labeled as iPod-ready, courtesy of a USB port, but is said to work with most any digital audio device. The unique grill is already available from online stores and retails for around $150. So it looks like it only comes in black. So, of course, those of you iPodders, you know, who want it all to match up, you have to have one of the black ones to do that. And, again, the disclaimer, this is not a joke. It's a real product. So here's two other new products just to make sure that, you know I'm legit. And of course, then you'll think this one's fake, too. This one's kind of cool. It's a flexible wireless keyboard it's a company called Brando. It uses the 2.4 gigahertz frequency to let you take your typing anywhere. Since it's virtually indestructible and water-resistant, you can probably chance taking it into the tub without completely breaking it. Just don't submerge it entirely underwater. It's got two AAA batteries in it, so there is some electricity there before you start, you know, dipping it in the water next to your, I don't know, unmentionables. But kind of cool, you know, flexible and wireless. That's sort of ultimate. You can roll it up and all that. It's kind of rubbery looking. And then finally, the super battery is here. Now, it's a wind-up power device to charge up your gadgets. The super battery recharging device contains a 5-volt, 700-amp rechargeable power pack, which you can supplement with a quick wind-up if you need more juice while on the road. It looks pretty useful. It's around $35. It uses a USB connection to recharge your iPod or other device. Just keep Super Battery plugged into any AC outlet overnight, and it fully recharges, holding that charge for at least 2 weeks. And should you use up Super Battery's charge on the road, just crank the handle to power up the internal personal emergency generator. Just 2 minutes of easy cranking gives you 5 full minutes of cell talk time, 30 minutes standby, or a full 50 minutes of operation of the built-in emergency flashlight. Ah, so that does have a light thing in it. But this one clearly is mostly aimed at the battery charging front and not at the flashlighting front. But that, you know, the tough part is cranking for 2 minutes to get 5 minutes of cell talk time means that you're pretty much right there on the emergency side of life. So that's all the new stuff, and that's the news. So, and of course, now there's no Jay to go, all right.
Oh, thanks for that, Peter.
Yeah, we all got to take turns imitating Jay tonight.
Yeah, we all have to do it, or else there'll only be one survivor. do we have any calls on the line? Or do
we do, but let's give out the number, 713-526-5738 to be on the air tonight. Cool. 713-526-KPFT.
All right, well, so does anybody have any other technology-related stuff that we should vamp for a minute and let the phone lines fill up, or should we just
I'm still reeling from the iGrill.
The iGrill. I
yeah,
saw that,
great.
And I really thought it was a joke. I thought, this is one of those that somebody put out for April 1st, and it just made its way around.
That's just weird. Like, hey, we have a grill. People like to listen to music when they grill. Let's make them into one thing. It's just odd.
So I'm going to go chill out on the south side of Houston and actually get the real iGrill with Bluetooth technology and maybe even some spinners.
That's right. That's what we really
I thought that was gold tooth technology.
I didn't get a good deal. Mine kind of turned.
The iGrill, which is an iPod shuffle small enough to fit in a gold tooth.
It's coming. unless Steve Jobs is indicted first, it's on its way. So,
yeah, really, that one I have debated on that. It seems kind of business pagey to me about Apple. What Dwight's talking about is Apple stock option backdating stuff, and now we've got the he said she said thing going, where the former CFO said that Steve Jobs was heavily involved, and the board of directors says he wasn't.
Yeah, not only was Fred Anderson, the former CFO, not only said that Jobs knew about it, but that he helped pick the dates, the good dates to date the options.
I think all this is leading up to the iPhone launch when he gets a phone call and says, just shred the papers, just shred everything. The first official call.
The new special Apple I option with special redating technology.
All right, well, we do have a call.
Okay, Barrett.
That would be me. By virtue of being the only caller, we've got Nicholas.
Hello, Nicholas.
Yes.
What can we do you for?
Well, not that kind of guy, but I need some help.
Well, Jay's not here tonight, so you're out of luck anyway.
You called the wrong show tonight.
I've got a PCU CPU, I'm sorry, that was given to me, and the guy doesn't remember the password or username. I was wondering if he can bypass that.
What's the operating system? Windows what?
Compact.
Is it like Windows XP or?
As professional.
XP Pro.
Can you use NTPasswd for that?
Yeah.
Once again?
Can you say it in Jay's voice?
Have you tried installing the operating system on top of itself? No, there's a program called NT
Password.
Password, but it's PASSWD.
Okay.
If you do a Google search, I'm pretty sure it comes up pretty high, if not on the top of the list. It's actually written, I think, put together by a guy in the Netherlands, I think. I think it's a .nl.
Mm-hmm. .no,
email,
yeah.
URL. But yeah, if you do that, I think it's a self-booting Linux bootable that you can burn to a CD or to floppy, and then when you boot off that, it'll actually look at the hard drive and mount the file system and go in and try to blank out the password.
It also serves as a registry editor, so if you want to really get yourself in trouble, you can hack your registry.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
It is. It's the first hit on Google. If you just put in NTPASSWD, you'll have it.
Okay. I've been listening to you guys' news. I'm watching the game at the same time.
And wishing that you could listen to music while grilling.
Exactly.
If only somebody had thought of that before.
Inside and outside. Okay, thanks, guys. Right.
Thank you, Nicholas.
All right, be good.
Our first call without Jay.
It's kind of liberating, isn't it?
It's not even 8:30 yet. We've already burned through all the calls. Good night, everybody.
Manana.
Goes on forever.
Oh, great. We got another caller.
We were having so much fun, too.
Well, by the length of the fold, we've got Alberto.
Hello, Alberto.
Hi. I've got a question for you guys. I have an older gateway, Pentium 4, and I run on it a HP ScanJet scanner that my computer uses in a program, to help me with my reading. And it started acting up, and when I hit the scan button on my computer, the computer tells me a weird message.
What is the weird message? Alberto.
Yes. It tells me scanner failed to initialize.
Well, now that's not so weird. Because your scanner is not talking to the computer the way it's supposed to.
Right.
And there's a couple of things that could be. It could be the driver, which is the software that communicates between the operating system and the hardware, or it could be a problem with the hardware itself, because the operating system isn't getting the response it needs to back from the scanner. So what have you tried in terms of troubleshooting?
Nothing. I looked at the program, and it doesn't...
Do you know the scanner is turned on and plugged in?
Yeah, it's plugged on. It's plugged in, and the wire that connects to the computer to the processor is plugged in, and that's it. That's all I know, that they're both plugged in, and when I lift the lid on the scanner, that little fluorescent light somewhere in there should turn on, which means that it's ready, and nothing comes on.
Oh, that when you lift it up, the light does not come on?
Right.
Then it sounds like you may have a hardware problem. The scanner may have died.
Finally gone out?
Yeah, that's what that sounds like.
How old is it?
7.
7 years old?
Yeah.
It lived a good life.
Bury it with dignity and move on, Alberto.
Okay.
And you can probably get a scanner that's a lot better for very little money nowadays.
Sure. The only question that I have is, will the old software that I'm running, that's running in my computer, would it work on a newer scanner? Would it work?
What software are you using? Are you using the software that originally shipped with the first scanner?
Sure. It's a reading program. I have a program on my computer that talks to me because I'm visually impaired.
Yeah, chances are, usually programs like that, they use what's called just a Twain source, and most scanners will show up as a standard Twain source. So if it's not the actual scanning software that, shipped with the scanner that, lets you do everything, if it's a second, like a third-party piece of software, it should probably work with any scanner. So you're saying you scan stuff and it reads it out to you, like OCR and...
Sure.
Yeah, it should still work. You've got a really good chance of that.
Twain has been a standard for a pretty long time.
10, 15, it's been a while.
More than 7 years, fortunately.
Yeah. So, I would think it would work.
So you're saying buy a new scanner?
That sounds like that would probably be the problem.
Okay, yeah, because everything's on correctly, but that little, when I lift the lid, that little light in there doesn't come on, and the computer tells me that the scanner failed to initialize.
When Alberto, how much did you pay for the scanner 7 years ago?
No, these were given to me by the state because of my visual impairment. So it was part of a Commission for the Blind program.
So it was pretty expensive, I'm guessing, 7 years ago. Now they're almost marginal to where, you know, a power source, this power supply for that might be as much as an actual new scanner. You know, there's not much to them anymore. So you watch for specials or just, you know, have some friends look out, but you can get them for, I would say, like, what do you think, $150?
Around $50 probably.
Would any scanner pretty much kind of work?
Yep, should.
Okay.
I would think so. Like, I mean, unless that's some super special scanner.
No, it's a Hewlett-Packard ScanJet.
Yeah,
model,
I would think the scanners today, I would think, would be beyond the capabilities of that one. So
now, Alberto, there is one issue. It's 7 years old. How does it? What kind of cable does it use to connect to your computer?
It connects into a USB port.
It does use USB. Okay, that's good. Because a lot of the older ones, they're that old, use what's called a parallel cable, a big wide cable, and those are hard to find now. And so if you needed that because of the age of your computer, you might have been out of luck. But if it's USB, you'll be in good shape.
Okay. Okay. Well, are you saying that I don't think we can... Well, I think the cable is directly into the scanner, so it, you know, there's no way of changing the cables or anything.
Yeah, on the new one, the cable will be separate from the scanner. You can plug it into each end.
That's been a really early USB device.
Yeah, to have one
without the other in there.
And it's possible that it could be. Barrett may have mentioned this. It's possible it could be the power supply instead of the actual scanner, but I don't know.
That's what it sounds like. But the thing is, finding a power supply that old. I mean, you can actually, there are sites where if you know the polarity and you know how many volts you need and how many amps you need, you can go out there and you can get those. But honestly, those are so expensive. I think you might have a better chance.
By the time you got one,
and shipping and everything else,
you could get a new scanner for the same price or close to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring. That it's probably much less of a hassle just to get another scanner.
Plus, your scanner is going to be several times faster, and the resolution. Not that it makes much of a difference with OCR stuff, but it's just going to go a lot faster. I think you'll be a lot happier with it.
Well, I'm glad because I can't read, so I put my correspondence in the scanner and the computer reads it to me, scans it, and then it reads it to me. So, you know, it's just a very handy device for me.
Well, cool. Well, good luck with that.
Okay, thank you very much. You guys have a great party. You're doing very well.
We're just waiting on the pizza now. Thanks, Alberto.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Maybe he can. Maybe you can call back next week and tell Jay what a good job we did.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Because Jay won't believe us.
Right. Well, we have a lot of open lines. In fact, they're all open.
We've answered the questions so well that callers don't even have questions
to ask. Questions are afraid to pop up tonight because they know.
You know, this is one of those things where if you know, for those people who are afraid of Jay, and there is a lot of Jay-phobia out there.
I'm afraid of Jay.
If this is your opportunity to talk, you know, to the Technology Bites crew without the possibility of getting your head bitten off. So call us, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Or as we used to say back in the day, 713-JAM-KPFT.
Which made Jennifer for the intern.
I like saying that. Yeah, 713-526-5738. Call and be safe.
And, you know, don't be afraid of Jay. He's just a big marshmallow, like the Stay Puft Marshmallow guy at the end of Ghostbusters. He's 50 feet tall.
Oh, look, the
Jay's
board is
calling on line 5. It says, take the shot. It says, take Peter out.
Wow, look. Now they're all.
I think we're in over our head now.
Yeah, that's right. We're in trouble now. Here they come.
Oh, man. Now they're all full.
They're all full. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
As we wait for Groove to fill, I'm sure Groove is melting down out there.
Yeah,
hey, man,
right.
This one's all full up.
That's right. That's excellent.
Groove, come on. If you're listening to us, man, you're not doing your job answering the phones right now.
That's right.
I know you won't hear this for 8 seconds.
That's right. Tight and fast, Groove. All right.
Mana. Here we go. Well, it is the first call.
So we'll
take it. We've got Superfan Steve. And Superfan
Steve.
Here. Yeah, this is Jay's buddy. And I just can't believe that we've got a whole show going, and I can't harass him, and he can't harass me.
But
now we may not let you harass us. To,
I would never do that, guys.
I think you should.
No way. you guys, you know, are top notch as me. But no, I just I called several weeks ago, and I was wondering. I never got back around to calling back. And said he had all the lines open. I've got a computer that has no USB ports on it. It's running Windows 98. And I wanted to know how, if there's a way to hook a USB scanner up to that thing. Is there any...
You just need a USB adapter, and if you've got an open PCI slot, you can go in and use it there, you know, between like two.
I don't have a PCI slot.
You've got no slots. Do you have ISA slots?
I've got COM port and printer port.
Do you have a parallel? You have a parallel port?
Parallel port is a printer port, I believe.
Yeah, you can get USB to parallel converters, I believe. So you can hook a USB device into a parallel port. Now, I don't know how much they cost. But you can get them, I'm pretty sure.
Is this a desktop?
This is a desktop, yes.
And the reason you say you don't have any card slots available, is it that you don't know, or is it that you filled up all the slots inside the computer for extra cards?
I've got things inside the computer already filled up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've already filled everything up inside there, because I bring the internet into that computer and from the router, and then I've got the scanner, and I'd like to be able to hook the scanner up to it, but it's got a USB port on, a USB plug on it.
Well, probably if you don't have any slots, then the parallel is your best bet. Parallel to USB adapter.
Okay, so do they make a thing where I could leave my printer plugged up at the same time I plug that up, or do I have to unplug the printer and then plug this other thing up?
Well, you know, you're starting to get kind of like a real Frankenstein thing going there, because you can get an AB switch box that switches back and forth
between
multiple parallel devices, but then you put a USB adapter on one of those, and you know you may be asking for it there. I'm not sure.
You're getting into Ernie land at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I heard the phone calls ringing there a few minutes ago, and you guys are just having such a wonderful time. And I will let you get on to more and better questions than I could ask. So thanks again for being there for us all.
Thanks, Steve. Whoops. It looks like it's pretty cheap if you want to go, you know, like USB to parallel, but if you want to go parallel back to USB, you're looking, you know, closer to like 70, 80 bucks.
70 or 80 bucks.
The one I'm seeing is 69.
Well, it'd be cheaper to get an old scanner that's parallel that actually has the pass through, where you can pass through and hook a printer onto it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he may be in the land of he needs a new computer.
Yeah. Or maybe just think about what you've actually got plugged into all those PCI slots and see if you can't give something up, or maybe something with some redundancy.
I'm thinking that he just thought that the inside of the case was a nice potato warmer, and it's actually full of potatoes.
potatoes.
They eventually grew roots and they mildew. You can't keep them in there as long as you think, man.
They get those eyes on them.
They all have eyes.
They all have eyes.
Watching
all right,
you.
Who's next? Who's next?
By length of hold, we've got Brad.
Hello, Brad.
Duh.
How's it going?
Are you a robot?
No, I'm not.
That actually sounded really robotic.
Groovehouse.
Not last time I checked, anyway.
Groovehouse has been haranguing us for not saying the names of the callers when we push the button.
After you push the button.
So we need to say hello, Brad,
hello,
much quicker
hello,
than we
Hello, Brad. You're on
hello.
The air.
Right. So what's up, Brad? What you need?
Well, I have a question I know you guys don't know the answer to, but I thought I'd call because you were complaining because nobody was calling. So
so now you're going to humiliate us, is that it?
Well, not really. I just wanted to find out if you guys know where I can find a programmer or someone who's experienced with Invox or CTADE. Those are two different programs, but they do similar things.
I think you can sign up with, like, Monster, and where you can scan the resumes that have been posted and look for anybody who's put out, you know, who's applied for a job at Monster.
Are you looking
or Dice
to,
with those on their resume.
Are you looking to hire a program, or are you looking for, like, some work for hire kind of stuff? Are you
looking just for project?
There's, I've been using at work a site called Odesk, like the letter O-D-E-S-K.com, and it's kind of like a place where you can, like, spec out a project, and you put it out there, and then other people, you know, sign in with their credentials, and they can, like, bid on those projects, and then you farm them out that way. It's kind of a 1099 situation.
Okay.
And that they actually list down the list, like, the number of applicants or programmers, you know, that are available out there by language, so you can search down pretty quickly to see, you know, the Invox stuff or the, you know, the CTADE.
What's a CTADE?
Well, it's a scripting program that helps you build voice applications. It's like, you know, kind of like the banks use when you call in to check your balance on the phone and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So IVR kind of application stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, kind of IVR, but it also interacts with the database.
Well, cool. Well, odesk.com. Hopefully that'll get you in the right direction.
Well, you've got me. I thought you guys wouldn't know, and you did. So great. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I'm feeling much more self-confident now that we have done that.
Don't get cocky.
Kind of
don't get cocky, Dwight.
Bring it on. I'm ready.
Don't turn into cocky Dwight.
That's kind of cool. I didn't realize that ODESK stands for the On-Demand Global Workforce.
All right.
So that's kind of cool.
Wouldn't that
also
be
DICE.com?
Yeah, I think they're better at coding than they are at acronyms and initialisms.
Yeah, DICE.com is another good place to look for folks that can do that. So
of course, now Barrett has outed himself as outsourcing all the work for the people that...
Only lately. I've had a really hard job.
I haven't told them yet.
If there are any listeners, seriously, that are really like adept PHP developers that understand coding, and really I'm looking for people that don't really exist, or if they do exist, they're already really happy in their job. But if you've got what takes with PHP, you know, email me or
something. I'm looking for somebody with at least 18 years of HTML experience.
Yes. 34 years of Ethernet experience.
Looking for a combination of Tim Berners-Lee and Bill Joy to come and work for $13,000 a year.
We can't pay 13. We're looking at 12.50, I'm afraid. But we don't have any benefits either. Steve Jobs did it for a garage, you know, for housing, so you could too. Luckily, we've got a lot of probably employed people on the phone. We've got Peter online too. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how you doing? Hello?
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 Hey,
yeah.
We're doing...
We're here.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're doing...
It's on,
yeah.
Peter.
Hi, I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I have a three-year-old compact Presario laptop, and the problem with it is that over the last three or four months, it just keeps rebooting itself. It would go into reboot mode for about 10 times at a time, or sometimes it would just go off. And I thought I had a problem with spyware or anything like that. And so what I did was basically just wiped the hard drive and reinstalled everything, but it keeps doing the same thing. I was listening to your show tonight, and I decided maybe you guys would have some ideas for me.
How far does it get in the boot-up process before it reboots again?
When I put it on, it would come on, and I would be working on it, and it could be 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and all of a sudden it would just go up.
Would it give you a message, or would it just power down and go
It wouldn't up? Give me any message at all.
Just the screen goes black, and then it boots back up?
Yes.
That could be memory?
It could be memory. It could be heating, too. If your processor is getting too hot, it'll shut down. And
how old is this notebook?
I bought this in November 03.
Have you ever cleaned it out? Have you ever taken some compressed air and blown it out?
No, I do that with my desktop, but not the laptop.
Well, the laptop can get dust in it as well, and it acts like a blanket. Okay. And it could be heat-related, could be a bad memory, could be a power issue. You know, that's the kind of thing that's hard to troubleshoot. Mm-hmm. If you, you know, if, what I would start with is get a can of compressed air and kind of blow in around the fan, around the keyboard, around the back side of it. There are some vents back there, and just kind of blow it out, see if that doesn't help. If it still does it, you might have a memory problem, and there are programs that you can download that will check your memory, like MIM386, I believe is what it's called. Do a search for MIM386, and that lets you, you create a boot disk with it. You
the problem is that somebody did recommend MIM386 to me,
uh-huh.
and I did download that, but once I once I started working with that program, it just for 2 hours straight, the program refused to work. So it just, for some reason, I was not able to test my memory.
When you said refused to work, would it reboot? Would it keep rebooting, or would it just not run?
Would it lock up?
It just would lock up. It wouldn't run.
Did it give you error messages? Did it show error messages in the memory when it did that?
No, it didn't.
Now, that sounds like heat. Mm-hmm. That does sound like heat. So you might try blowing it out. What you may want to do is take it to a technician who can essentially, you know, really give it a good cleaning.
You see, that's my problem. This is a three-year-old computer, and I'm torn between sending it to a repairman who would probably take about $300 or $400 from me, and between that and just buying a new one. So,
well, I don't think you need to do that. I mean, I think just tell, unless it needs parts, you know, you're probably looking at about $50 for somebody to take it apart and clean it.
What you could do is, yeah, just go and ask to have it blown out. And sometimes, you know, with memory, and a lot of times with like the processors and the heat sinks on the processors, you know, if you jangle them around or if they take a blow, sometimes things will become a little bit unseated. Or it's possible, you know, like the heat sink on the processor, like the thermal compound's a little bit older. It doesn't quite have that same, like, tightness of the connection, so it's not wicking that heat like it used to. And it, if you're really lucky, it could be something as easy as you reseating a piece of memory or, you know, reseating the hardware, the processor, and it could, you know, solve the heat problem. So it might not be worth just, you know, saying, hey, could you look at it?
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't put much over $50 or $60 towards it, but if they would do that, you know, crack the case and clean everything up for, you know, $40 or $50, it might be worth it. But you are right. You can get, you know, a new Dell laptops for, you know, I think under $500 now, can't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have one last question. If it is, let's assume that it's a memory problem. I do have two memory modules in there. What would be the remedy for that? Can I just remove the memories one at a time to save?
Yeah, one thing you can do right now, as long as you don't have to have both of them in there at the same time, is you can just pull one and see if it does that, and then if it does, just try the other one and see if it does that. And that way, if it's just one of the memory things that's offending the system, you know, you can find out. Worst case is if you have any friends that have that same kind of, you know, the same kind of laptop, you can find some other room where you can put some new memory in there and see how it behaves as well. But again, that's getting into, you know, spending some money.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I guess we have to appoint someone to be the official, like, Jay, for giving me the definitive goodbye. So, I do that. Maybe Dwight can be the closer.
I nominate Groovehouse.
He's not here. He could do it. He could be making hand signals all around.
Okay, okay. At the end of the call, I'll say, you are the weakest link. And then you can hang up.
No chance for a puddle at all.
Actually, I'll just make this hand motion to let you know when it's over instead of just a pause.
What is Jennifer the intern saying? Another hand.
Sorry, that was an audio reference to a visual Monty Python reference. Yeah, it doesn't work as well when you can't see the hand motion.
No. Okay, who's next?
We've got David.
Hello, David.
Hello. I also have a compact Presario, and so I decided to download all my CDs on there, and then I was going to put it on my various little iPod-like devices, most of them from China, off brands and things. And so I downloaded them on there, and it said, you have no files. And I looked on my Windows Media Player, and they're in WMA format, so I figured Windows Media Player would know what to do.
So you've ripped, okay, so you've more or less, you've taken a CD and tossed it in the machine,
yeah.
And then you've ripped those tracks, and you've ripped them not to MP3, but to WMA format, you think?
I figured that you would just, there would be something, you'd just translate them into MP3 when it goes to the iPod or something.
Well, you're using an iPod, an Apple iPod?
No. It's like a... Well, I've got various ones. I've got the Imprex, and I've got a couple of the... I don't know where they are, but...
Really, I mean, your best bet is probably to if you're going to have, you know, a number of, you know, portable media devices, and we just call them MP3 players, because, I mean, that's usually what the format that kind of broke everything was. The best way to do it is maybe to stay away from the WMA, which is the Windows Media Audio, and just go straight to MP3 or go straight to a format that's going to be pretty universally supported by all the different players, whether they're, you know, from Apple or from, you know, some one-off in Taiwan.
Because some of those players are, they're not going to play WMAs, and you're basically... almost some of them, you're just almost using them as a USB device. Like, you hook them up and you're just dragging and dropping files onto them, whatever they are, and the device will recognize them as if they're MP3 files, and it'll play them. But if they're not, then it won't recognize them, and that could be what's happening.
And Windows Media Player, by default, because hey, it's Windows, rips initially to WMA. You have to go in and tell it to do MP3 before you start, or it will use WMA.
That's the question. How do you do that?
Well, it is inside... we've all got Macs.
Hey, I think Groovehouse has
Groovehouse.
A PC.
Yeah, Groovehouse.
8 seconds later,
there
come in here.
There is a setting. If you go... what version of Windows Media Player are you using?
Whatever. I don't know. It's like a 2005 Windows XP.
So 10, probably Windows Media Player 10. There should be a, if you're using 10 or 11, there's a button called RIP.
I see a RIP. Okay.
All right, and you click right under it. There's a little bar, and it will give you...
More info.
Right, give you options. And you go into those options, and there is a, I believe the tab is recording... And it will let you choose the format.
Okay, well, I just hit more info under the RIP, and it... Oh, wait, maybe I have to hit RIP first.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there should... anyway, somewhere in there are options that tell you what to do. And it will let you choose WMA. It'll let you choose MP3.
And
some others.
Looks like you're going to select Tools from under the top menu and then choose Options and then choose RIP the Music. There's going to be a RIP Music tab. And then, in addition to RIP Music to this location, you can also tell it that under the RIP settings, you want to rip it to MP3. So your best bet on this is just to go to Google and type in Windows Media Player RIP to MP3. And the very first link is going to be how to rip CDs with Windows Media Player 10. And it'll give you a step-by-step walkthrough of how to set it up to the default. The default format is going to be MP3.
Mm-hmm.
And really, your biggest decision at that point is if you want to rip like 128 or 192. And those are just bit rates that kind of like let you know what kind of quality is out there. If you're a real audio file.
And it affects the file size.
Yeah, and it affects the file size too. Usually 128 is kind of the sweet spot, although, you know, some people kind of rip at 192. If you really want to be a music snob, you can rip as high as, you know, 3 what have
320.
You. 328.
And it takes a little more space or what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes more space.
And okay. I've got Vista running here with the Windows Media Player 11, and it is RIP and then more options and then RIP Music.
Can't find anything under RIP.
If you're using Windows Media Player 9, the description he gave was for 10 or 11. If you're using Windows Media Player 9, then yeah, you'll need to look for that the menu item under RIP.
But I don't have to be connected to the internet, right?
No, not at all.
Okay. The only thing the internet will get you is when you put in a CD in there, is it'll actually look up something called the CDDB, and based on, you know, is it an ISBN number? I don't know what it is. It's a small serial number on the CD. Mm-hmm. It'll look it up, and it'll actually auto-import and auto-flesh out, like, all of your ID3 tags, telling you, like, you know, who produced it, when it came out, the track names, the artist, so on and so forth, so you don't have to type those in by hand. So it is kind of nice, like, when you do that, but if you have it connected to the internet, you don't have to key those in by hand, right. But it's not a requirement.
Now, the you may be able to find is a WMA to MP3 conversion program, and which will save you the hassle of going through and re-ripping. If you do WMA to MP3 converter in Google, you should find several of them. A lot of them are freeware.
Oh, someone's interrupting there. Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm going to try those things.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck, David. and another
you didn't
awkward
see my
exit.
Hand motion.
No, it looked like did, you're really it. Happy, like, hey, Barrett. Hey, flicked it.
Well, we could probably do one more call before Barrett time. If you want to get in the queue, we have a couple lines open. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738.
Actually, Groovehouse says that BBR is for music snobs. I don't know if you know if he's making fun of that or if he's saying, hey, BBR is
that's
for
music
snobs, yeah. Man. BBR is variable bit rate, which kind of like looks at the music and determines how what the bit rate needs to be for you to hear it at a uh-huh. really good quality. And if it takes less to do it, it encodes it less. So it saves you a little bit more file size there.
All right.
And that's MP3s up
there. I tried to use VBR on some Michael Jackson albums, and it kept coming back with a zero bit rate. I don't know what that means.
It was a comment on his nose fell off.
All right. By length of hold, we've got Fowler.
Hello, Fowler.
Oh, good evening, sir. How are you doing?
You're on a radio show.
Yeah. 50,000 watts. How's it feel?
You said, how does it feel to be on the show?
Yeah. 50,000 watts.
Oh, I was listening, then I realized my son, he let me use a computer that doesn't work, so it feels good to...
That's not very nice of your son.
...get some advice before I spend money on repair on this computer.
What can we do for you tonight?
My son's computer. I was going to try to use it because I have a dinosaur computer, home computer. Okay, my computer, his computer, when I turn it on...
It's a laptop?
Yeah, it's a laptop, Compat. It has Windows XP, Pentium 4, and let me see what model Compact this is. Let me turn it upside down a second.
It's Compact Night at Technology Bytes.
Let's see here.
Is it a boy or a girl laptop?
Hey, it's easier than the dinosaur when I have. I have to use a front-end loader to pack it around. Well, I don't see the mall right off. I got it upside down trying to eat a salad
at the
same time.
It's a compact
time.
Laptop running XP. It's
yeah, home edition.
So what is not exactly going right?
Okay. You boot it up. Turn it on. Boot it up. It said... It says Sys650 files F.08 built at such and such time. Warning: CMOS value - run SCU. What is that telling me?
Oh, your CMOS
failure.
Well, it could be your CMOS battery is dead. That's possible.
Sys650, I believe, is a it's an integrated video chipset. Was that Sys650?
Yeah, that's probably information about the motherboard.
Yeah.
It's telling you what kind of motherboard it is. The chances are, if you're lucky, it's the battery on the CMOS, the battery on the motherboard. The battery is used to keep the clock steady, keep information about what kind of drives you have in the system stable. If it goes out, certain things don't work. And so what you want to do is take it to a repair shop and get them to try a new battery in it.
Okay. Who's good on that repair and inexpensive?
Well, where did you get it?
No, my son. I got it from my son.
Where did he get it?
Oh, one of my cousins. He's one of the geeks, little geeks. They trade things.
Well, you know what you can always do, places like Micro Center, Fry's, Best Buy, all have repair shops. You know, whether it'll be cheap or not, you know, you can ask, you know, tell them what you want to do is replace the CMOS battery and how much they would charge. That's pretty standard operation.
Oh, okay.
And see what they have to tell you.
And if he's a little geek, you could probably threaten him.
Yeah. I'm a poor visitor. I don't think that super cousin that much.
Now, I've never replaced a battery in a CMOS.
I have in desktops, never in a laptop.
Yeah. I've done it in desktops. Yeah.
So I don't know how difficult it is to do, but but you know, it's kind of one of those things where if you have to ask how to do it, you probably should take it to somebody.
Oh yeah.
Although if you can find the model number, you might be able to go into Google and look for that model number or CMOS, like type this model number in CMOS and see if you can find a page that describes how to change the CMOS.
Yeah, while Compact doesn't necessarily put those out there, there are some good people on the web that'll actually go and give you step-by-step instructions on how to change out real simple stuff like that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. I sure thank you then.
All right. Good luck.
Good night. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Well, all right. We have done an hour of this. A little bit more than
successful. I think we're batting 100,000.
So we should say that you are listening to 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And now Flicted is going to press that button
and get phenomena.
Does the thing. Beer time. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Baritone! Yeah. That means it's time for... Baritone! Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. Whether in the form of people, camps, casts, or castrated devices, pods have entered our geek vernacular in a big way over the last 2 years. If you're all about all things pod, you might want to consider heading out Peter's Way to attend Pod Camp San Antonio on May 19th. This free event is an unconference where everyone is the speaker as well as the audience. Podcasters will get together with bloggers, vloggers, and new media folk who are all interested in getting their message out. Hit podcampsanantonio.com to register as either a presenter or a registrant. And if you're without a place to stay in San Antonio, hit up Peter soon, as the San Antonio house is sure to fill up fast. This weekend is also the last week of iFest. If the weather holds, the Houston International Festival might be the one day you go out into the big blue room. Taking place both Saturday and Sunday in downtown Houston, this year's celebration centers around China. No word as of yet as to whether or not the Wi-Fi router serving the area will be filtering content. For more information, you can hit www.ifest.org. This next one's a little bit in the future, but I think that it warrants a mention. Our own Dwight Silverman will be speaking at next month's Houston's Area Apple Users Group about his own experience making the move from his Windows-centric worldview to the adult onset Apple syndrome that he's currently fully in the throes of. That takes place at Rice University Media Center on Saturday, May 19th. I'll have more information for you as the date approaches, but if you absolutely can't wait, you can hit www.haaug.org. And getting back to this weekend, if you'd rather spend your Saturday indoors with a group of Linux geeks, you're in luck. The Houston Linux Users Group will be meeting this Saturday from 2 to 4 in the afternoon at the HAL PC headquarters. Hit www.hlug.org for details and directions. And to end on a slightly odd note, a new game for Nintendo's DS is coming out called Doki Doki Majo Saibon. From the Kotaku.com site, says that plot elements for SNK's Witch Toucher, Doki Doki Majo Saibon, have surfaced over at Famitsu. The game stars naughty Akuji Nishimura, who is commanded by an angel Lulu to search for witches lurking in his junior high school. When the search is narrowed down, the suspected junior high school witch is examined with the touch pin. How do you know if the little girl is a witch? Does she float? Does she weigh the same as a duck? Usually there's a witch crest hidden somewhere on her body, which can appear in witch check mode. The goal? Make her heart beat quickly. Players use the stylus to touch the girl, whose expression will change depending on how her heart beats. The background will change as well. Rush things, and the girl does not respond. Go figure. Players must take it slow when touching these witches or flowers or something. Odd fare for Nintendo for sure, but not really that odd for Japan in general. So whether you're weirded out by this, you think that it's kind of cool, one thing is for certain, a new gaming genre has been born, hopefully not bored. Touch a girl to see if she's a witch. Game on. That's it for your touch and tell presentation, and that's that for Barrett time.
It's the video equivalent of roofies. Is that what you're saying?
It's pretty odd. And the weird thing is these kind of titles are out there in Japan, and you can get them, and there's some really odd stuff floating around. But the fact that Nintendo is going to publish this one, you know, being predominantly, you know, the cleaner kind of gaming console. So it's odd. The screenshots that I've seen so far they've been pretty crazy, but we'll see how the game actually pans out.
And this is for which platform?
The Nintendo DS.
But not the Wii.
Not the that's got a whole other set of games that's coming out later on.
Yes,
yeah.
The mind boggles with Touch Me with the Wii.
I don't know if anyone's ever checked out the VGCats.comics, but I guess it's someone that's really into cats and video games, so they put all these, you know, cartoon cats in these games. They had some really good stuff on the Wii, and I was asking them to do some rather untraditional gaming techniques, I guess. It's VGCats.com. It's for checking out.
Oh, and coming back from Barrett time, when people can actually hear me, last week, I wasn't gone at the end of the show. basically, when you guys went to Barrett time, somebody potted down the that my line or whatever.
Ooh, I wasn't here.
And Jay never brought it back up.
That was Jay. That absolutely was
so
Jay,
you were actually on the line the entire time.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I'm here.
What?
That's like being buried alive, isn't it, Peter?
But
it's very odd. Well, and speaking of which, you know, Barrett and Flicted both went to that concert. How was it?
I actually stayed. Flicted took off.
Yeah, I went. Dan Deacon was interesting. He's actually going to be back in June, mid-June, I think, playing the same place, which the Mink. Playing the Mink, although this time he's coming around, I think he's supposed to be headlining, and it's actually, I think, a tour in support of his, he's got a new album that's supposed to be out then, so I think he'd already done it, but it hadn't been pressed and released yet or something. He didn't have copies for sale, so that's gonna, he's gonna have copies for sale. Adult, which is the band I actually wanted to see, would have been a really cool show, except their equipment had a malfunction, like, somewhere into the second song, and it took them like, I don't know, like 10 minutes to get things going again, and after that it seemed kind of hesitant about whether things would continue working for the rest of the show, so
it wasn't
everything I would had hoped it would be, but and nobody said anything about my Soma FM shirt. I was very sad because, you know, I got that Soma FM shirt, you know, and I like to talk about what's going on with internet radio, because it really makes me mad. So I kind of hope that, you know, somebody would say something about that they, you know, knew what Soma FM was and that they liked it. And
like some fat guy with a cigar would come up and go, you know, as a representative of the recording industry of America, I think that stations like Soma FM should be shut down. And then you could, you know, go off on him, get all punk.
Yeah, he would go up and go, you know, as a music listener, I support all of these new royalty fees that are going to happen because they're helping the artists.
I'm running out of dollar bills to light my cigars with, so.
Well, you know, because I actually saw I've been reading, I think it's Rusty Hodges, I think, is actually the guy who heads up Soma FM, and he's got a blog, and it's pretty interesting reading what he has to say, you know, from his perspective about the cost increases and how it's going to hurt things. But it's not just them. I mean, it's going to affect Pandora. I mean, if you like Pandora, it's going to affect Live 365. It's going to affect, actually, a lot of people hadn't thought about this, but I think it's going to affect Second Life, because people stream music into Second Life, so it's going to affect Second Life, at least the streaming music, when you go onto parcels of land that have that set up. There's just a lot of stuff, and it's unfortunately, years ago when they originally initiated the laws, there was an exception clause, sort of, where companies, instead of doing a pay per song per listener fee, they could choose to pay a percentage based on either their amount of profit or their operating expenses. And so a lot of the small ones opted to do that because it was expensive, but it was still affordable. And when they passed these new laws, they're saying you can't do that anymore. Everybody pays, you know, per song per listener. So I was actually listening to a rockabilly station about a week ago, and they actually came on, and this is in the middle of the night, and they came on and said, if you are listening and you're not going to be listening at some point, please turn off your player. Like, don't leave it playing, because even though you're not there, we're going to have to pay royalties as if you were there. In the future, you know, back royalties, we're going to have to set this up. But actually, a really interesting thing that Rusty mentioned, or somebody on his blog in a comment mentioned, is that they had been an independent artist, and the people that collect these royalties, a lot of times, they never actually get in back in the hands of the small independent artists, because they don't actually keep track of that. So actually, the money gets divvied up and goes to the artists, which are the big artists on the big labels. So, you know, some small artist gets played, the small radios, you know, companies have to pay their fees for that, and then the money goes to, you know, Gwen Stefani or Madonna or whoever. I mean, it goes to a big one. It doesn't actually help the small artists, and unfortunately, it's the small artists and the small labels that are going to be the ones that are affected and hurt by this anyway. So, it makes me sad.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who don't realize what's about to happen are going to be pretty upset. I have people who've been coming up to me who aren't, you know, internet geeks. They're not into technology for technology's sake, and they have heard because they listen to Pandora, you know, they've heard the announcements there that, you know, this could go away, and it's freaking them out. Pandora is really popular among kind of the mainstream user, and they're getting kind of a rude awakening.
Well, I don't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I know somebody had said that one of the people that's on the record side had said, well, you know, all these small people need to do is, you know, they just need to do pre-rolls, or, you know, they need to add some banner ads on their web pages, and they need to add, you know, commercials in the show, and that's how they cover their costs. You know, it makes sense. That's what, you know, the big ones companies do. And, you know, a lot of people's response was, well, who's going to listen to that? And even if that's true, like, how are we going to find enough people to do this? And if you run the numbers on what you should be able to get per cost, they're basically going to have more commercials per hour than normal radio does. And so it's just like, what's the point? And this is for small independent people who, you know, it's sad.
Pretty wrong. Yeah, I have a feeling that everybody should watch very closely as this comes to its end and look at the stats on, say, music piracy. Because I have a feeling that when a lot of these online broadcasting type places have to stop, that you will find that the file trading will go up instead of down. And that the RIAA may be shooting itself in the foot. They may be killing their music sales because people are going to...
Well, I think so, because I think people are going to, you know, instead of going back to file trading for, you know, being able to get music, procure music, they're going to go back there to see what's new and to get new sounds and to see what other people are listening to, which is kind of the niche that the online radio stations are filling right now.
Well, and the other thing is, a lot of the ones that are going to be hurt are the ones that are small, that are doing niche markets, you know, where the people that are listening to it are people that are interested in that kind of music. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people, if they sign to a smaller label, the smaller labels won't sign away their rights to let them play for free for no royalties, because that's what you have to do, basically, to play an artist that's on a label. They won't do it because they want to upsell those artists to bigger labels, and the bigger labels won't accept them if they've signed these contracts, you know. So I'm kind of curious if this does go through, if it's actually not going to end up destroying a lot of small labels. Because you'll kind of end up with this, you know, no people not on a label and people on big labels. Because in order to get their music played in these niche markets, on these niche radios, to not be paying the royalties, they're going to have to not be on a label. So these small labels might have, you know, the artists won't sign up with them anymore. Because either they're going to be on no label so they can get their music heard by the people who are listening to the niche radio market, or they're going to have to be on a big label. So I don't know if that would happen. It's something I kind of thought of after I started thinking about it.
Well, maybe Superman will fly in and save us all before it happens. All right, who's next?
With mighty length of hold, 25 minutes, we've got John. Yeah, sorry about that. John, you're on the air.
Hello?
John.
Hey.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question regarding Windows Vista and the sleep mode. The problem has happened to me on two brand new HP computers, and the problem is the sleep mode basically doesn't work reliably. As far as there's two options when you go into the power settings, one to turn off the monitor and one to turn off the computer after a set amount of time. And what I've experienced with both of these brand new computers with Windows Vista was that no matter what, you know, it would never go into, as far as shutting off the computer. The monitor part worked fine, but shutting down the computer, it would never do that automatically after a set period of time.
When you, what do you have your settings at for shutting down? How exactly have you configured that?
Well, it was the way it works is there's two drop downs, and one was monitor and the other is turn off the computer.
Right.
And the setting for the monitor has always got to be less than the other one. So if you set one to 10 minutes for the monitor, the computer is 15 minutes. That's as low as you can set it. Or if you set the monitor to 1 minute, the computer, you know, 2 minutes is the lowest you can set it. I can't remember what it is.
Well, you know, Vista, one of the things that Vista has is a is the ability to be much more detailed about what happens when you do power settings. If you go to the screensaver module off of the personalization menu, do you know what I'm talking about?
You mean when you right-click the desktop?
Top and choose personalization and then the screensaver.
Okay.
And at the bottom of that screensaver module is the thing that says change power settings.
Okay, sure.
And there are three preferred plans.
Yeah.
Balanced, power saver, and high performance. Have you tried all three of those to see what happens?
You know, that would make sense if I did. I think I played with, you know, just one of them. You know, I think I only played with one of them.
Well, try using each one of the other ones and seeing what happens. You can also change the plan settings. One of the things you do when you change you can also create a new power plan from scratch.
Yeah.
You see over there on the left, and you can kind of build one the way you exactly what you want it to do. And the button that says change when the computer sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
Have you clicked on that?
I'm not sitting in front of the computer and I can't remember.
There's a link on the side of that window that says change when the computer sleeps. And that gives you just turn off the display and put the computer to sleep.
Okay, I'll check that out.
On this machine, do they both come with Vista? Or did you upgrade?
Yeah. Okay. No. This is straight out of the box, and it wouldn't, the power setting didn't work like it should.
I have found that Vista's sleep features are not very good. And in general, Windows sleep features have not been good. You know, they either don't work right, it's hard to wake the machines up in XP, for example, when you bring something back up.
Right.
And I haven't had much luck either with Vista. The setting that I prefer to use with Windows is Hibernate, where it writes what's in memory to the disk and then turns the power off. Vista has a hybrid sleep mode that first puts it into low power, and then after a certain amount of time, then writes it to Hibernate and shuts it off. But the problem is that the initial sleep phase is just as flaky as Windows XP's sleep phase was. And so that's what you're experiencing. And what I would do is in those settings is instead of having it go into sleep, have it go into Hibernate instead.
So Hibernate is still an option with Vista?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so your feeling on this is it's not something to do with HP, it's a Vista problem?
Well, it may be. I've seen it on machines other than HPs, but I've seen it on HP machines too.
Yeah.
I played around with a TX1000, which is a consumer tablet notebook. And it did that. It did the exact same thing you were describing. Now, what you might do is check and see if HP has newer drivers for your system.
No, they didn't.
They didn't? Well, then I'd look at switching to Hibernate for now. Eventually, you know, when Service Pack 1 comes out, there may be a fix for this.
Right.
There may also be a stealth hotfix. Microsoft issues hotfixes that you have to kind of get by request. So the one thing you might do is go to Microsoft support website, file an email report on this, and sometimes they actually will get back to you pretty quickly, and they might have a hot fix that's available for this.
Okay, well,
those
thanks
are your
for
options.
Your help.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Flickton's waving his arms. All right, who's next?
Next up, we've got Tony.
Tony, you're on the air.
That sounds great. I can't hear myself, though. I guess I'm on the phone.
You are.
Okay, so I got a question about a buddy of mine has a fairly new e-machine. It's about 10 days out of warranty, and he said that he started doing this weird thing, and after he researched it a little bit, it's called the blue face of death.
Blue screen of death.
Blue screen of death, I'm
yes.
sorry. So is there anything I can do for him? I'm proficient enough to take the original disc and redo the system. Is that going to do it, or is this a hardware problem?
Well, it depends on what's causing it. What is he doing when the blue screen happens?
It shuts down and reboots.
Now, what is he doing on the computer?
It's when he tries to boot up.
Oh, and at what point in the boot up process does it happen?
it looks like Windows XP comes up and the little bar across the bottom goes by several times and then it does it. And there's a real quick flicker of a screen that tells you some descriptions, but it goes so fast I didn't even bother to try to read it.
Right. By default, Windows reboots before it shows you the blue screen. And so there's a way, if you get to the desktop, you can change that. But it sounds like usually that's caused either by a hardware problem like bad memory or a driver issue, some kind of driver conflict. And has he tried booting it in safe mode?
Yes, it will boot in safe mode.
It will boot in safe mode. What he might try doing is seeing if he can get the latest video drivers for that machine.
When you say video drivers, you mean for the monitor?
Not for the monitor, for the video card in the machine. It is the,
okay.
It's
okay.
The piece of hardware in the computer that gives the image to the monitor.
Okay, the video card, right.
And get the latest drivers for that, try installing them. You can install them in safe mode, and then reboot from there and see what happens. If, you know, you can try doing the restore disk, but this may be all you need to do. A lot of times, video drivers are among the biggest culprits for this kind of thing.
Okay. And then finally, after all this time, I've got my G4 Mac transition machine that runs OS 9 and 10 within about 10 feet of my brand new iMac. And I needed to just real quickly verify, do I take a FireWire connection, hook the two, set up sharing, and then I'll be able to see one machine to the other?
Yeah, you should, or even Ethernet would work on that.
Ethernet also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll have to disconnect my Roadrunner in order to hook up an Ethernet connection, I think.
Oh, then you should just be able to
probably
only
have one.
Okay, you should just be able to go with FireWire. Although, I'm not really familiar, Dwight. Are you familiar with any of the FireWire networking protocols on there? I've mounted other PCs as a hard drive, been able to browse the drives, but as far as, you know, seeing as a network computer, I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work.
So, an Ethernet card, I mean, cable would be a lot easier.
Yeah, an Ethernet cable, and you can get little cheap hubs for, you know, 100 base T hubs for under $20 now if you don't have one.
You can get what?
Like a hub, so you don't have to unhook your Roadrunner connection if you want to have everything shared.
Yeah.
You can get a hub or a router for pretty inexpensive.
Sure, I got a USB hub. I know how that works. Okay.
Okay.
All right, well, I'll try that blue screen of death fix with the video driver and do it in safe mode. And then if that doesn't work, maybe next week I'll call you guys back.
Now, you won't be able, once you boot it in safe mode, he won't be able to download the driver from there, because safe mode does not give you access to the internet.
Right.
So
So he realized that, and he didn't know if that was part of the break or not.
Well, what he'll need to do is, you know, either burn it to a CD or put it in a USB drive. Although, will the USB drive work in safe mode?
I don't know
if it will. You may want to do a CD. CD should work in safe mode.
Yeah, well, I'll try to download it at a different location on the internet and burn it to a CD so that when I take the CD over there, we can boot in safe and go from there.
Hey, Tony, TomTom from IRC also suggests mentioning to your friend, make sure that your friend is shutting down the computer properly, not just, you know, pushing the power button.
Okay.
He's doing a proper shutdown. Sometimes problems like what you're describing can crop up, he says, if they improperly shut down the computer.
Okay.
I asked TomTom what the solution was, and he said they had to reinstall the operating system.
He said what?
He said they had to reinstall the operating system.
Oh, well, I don't mind that too much. I've done that to my daughters a couple of times. He said he didn't go to any odd sites or anything. He's strictly using it for some photography stuff of paintings that he's done. And so it's all straight in inside the computer. He has done some stuff on the internet, but he said he hadn't been going to any grown-up sites or anything like that. So that's not what the problem is.
If he's got stuff like scanners and USB base printers connected to it,
uh-huh.
He might try unplugging everything but the mouse and the keyboard. And see,
okay.
Because sometimes a peripheral device will cause a problem that will cause it to blue screen.
Well, he's got a special printer that is also a scanner that does photographic quality stuff because he was going to do prints of his paintings and then sell the prints. And so he bought it all just for that, and he got it at an Office Depot kind of a place and spent a few $100 and had the rebate thingy and forgot to do the rebate thingy. And dead gum.
That's what they hope for.
Yep.
It has a couple $100 burned up right there.
Yep.
Oh, well. So I'll try to get him up and running.
All right.
Thank you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
We're getting this down, I think.
Yeah.
All right. By length of fold, we've got Roy.
Quack. Hi there. I've got a series of multi-user questions. And to get beat around the bush, for my first question concerns the old MMX technology that was introduced, I think, with the old Pentium 166. I never did pay much attention to what that was because I'm mostly a programmer. But my main question is it, was it proprietary to Intel, and is it pretty much on all chips nowadays, regardless of brand?
It was proprietary to Intel. I remember at the time it was an additional instruction set. I think there were like 57
for multimedia, right?
Yeah, new microprocessor instructions, and was mainly designed to handle video, audio, and graphical data more efficiently.
Uh-huh.
So whether or not those are still like little legacy pieces that are in, you know, today's modern Intel chips, I don't know.
They are.
Well, they are. They
okay.
Are.
Well, here's my real question. Okay, there's two programs that I'm having problems with, okay? One of them is VideoLAN, which is a really excellent media player, and it handles just about any video format without any codecs, anything external, so you just install it and go. But my problem concerns the audio quality. There's a background hiss that's in just about everything I play, regardless of the format, and I was wondering if that had anything to do with whether or not my processors here support MMX, because I'm AMD all the way around.
AMD has MMX, has its own flavor of it, its own version of it. In fact, if I remember right, at the time when AMD introduced, and it came out under a different, it had a different name, but it essentially did for MMX what it did for x86. So yeah, they had their own style of it, and it should work with that. I mean, at this point, that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, because I read somewhere that the VideoLAN was optimized for Intel, and I really don't understand what that would mean. But my real question concerns FLAC files. I do a lot of BitTorrent, and most music out there is in MP3, but most of the classical is in FLAC. And I'm having the same problem with FLAC files that I'm having with VideoLAN. FLAC, actually, the files are actually much larger than MP3, and it's advertised as lossless. And I've tried several FLAC codecs, and the codec that plugs in the Nero to burn CDs, and no matter what, anything I start with a FLAC format has the same kind of background hiss behind it that I experience with the VideoLAN media player, even though they're unrelated.
No, that is very odd. You shouldn't be getting a hiss at all with FLAC, which leads me to believe.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen with like if you just open up some other Windows Media Player or whatever and play like just an MP3 or a WAV file or something?
Right. It doesn't happen with MP3. It's strictly FLAC, and I don't use Windows Media Player. I've never seen a version that was stable. But
what player are you using to play back your FLAC files right now?
I use either Total Recorder primarily. Or Winamp.
And Winamp gives you the same hiss?
All of them.
Now, is this when you're playing FLAC files from both your hard drive as well as like a CD-ROM?
I don't play them from CD-ROM.
Okay.
I've tried burning CD-ROMs from FLAC files using the plugin in Neuro, and then the resulting CD, I'll go into my living room and play it, and it'll have the hiss too.
Now, have you gotten... Okay, where are you getting the FLAC files that have the hisses? They're from multiple sources?
BitTorrent networks, file sharing.
What I would try, if I were you, is I would maybe take just a standard Redbook CD, like a normal audio CD, and rip it to FLAC.
And see if it plays.
And see what comes back at you, because it could be a problem if they're all BitTorrent sites that you're getting, it's very possible that it could be a BitTorrent thing where it's putting, a bit early on and everything's getting off, although the framing should kind of blow up on it if that's the case.
I don't know. I mean,
it's also possible that you might...
The SKV files, check and everything.
Yeah.
You almost also might try seeing if whatever video card you're using, if they're any newer audio, if they're newer audio drivers, but it's possible that the audio drivers that you have may have a problem handling certain types of audio.
Hmm. What are the specs on the PC? I mean, you've got enough RAM, it's a fairly fast processor, you're not overtaxing your system.
The processor is Athlon 2000 XP on my main machine.
Yeah, you're fine.
And it's actually not fast enough for some video files on VideoLAN. Real Player is a faster program.
Right, but I mean, for FLAC playback, you're fine.
Uh-huh.
Just for our listeners at home, FLAC just stands for Free Lossless Audio Codec, which is it's a free codec out there. And for like people that really get into like jam bands and just really like preserving the music, a lot of them will choose to record in that because it preserves everything. You don't lose any, you know, parts that some people might not think the human ear can hear.
And my experience is that most of the classical music out there is in FLAC and everything else is MP3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thanks. You've given me some ideas.
All right, well, good luck.
Okay.
Bye-bye. We've got some open lines. We have a lot of open lines. 713-526-5738. We've got about a little less than a half an hour to go, so we can take some more calls. 713-526-5738.
Next up, we've got Chris. Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Yes, I had just a hopefully an easy question. I seem to have had a problem since I bought this new computer about a year ago. It's running XP. And every time I wake it up out of sleep mode, it runs an auto play program where it pulls up what's on the drive, the CD DVD drive, and displays it. And it does it a couple times. And it's kind of annoying. I'm trying to figure out how to shut off that auto.
Like if it sees something in there, it'll automatically start it up.
Yes, you know, I leave a disc in there just for backing up once in a while.
And you've got XP Pro or XP Home?
It's XP Home.
XP Home, hang on.
There must be a setting in there. It's got an autoplay thing. I can't seem to find it.
Well, the one that I'm finding is a registry key hack. Do you guys know of any setting?
Yeah, no,
setting?
You don't need to hack the registry. There is a, if you right-click on the drive, in the icon for the drive in my computer...
Yeah.
And there should be, unfortunately, again, I've got Windows Vista here, so, but let's see if I can. If you right click on that drive and you choose properties.
Okay. Autoplay.
Yep. And you can disable it from there.
What the file from me?
In Vista, it allows you to decide what to do with every type of file type with it when it sees it. So you can kind of get down to, you know, what it does with programs versus what it does with CDs. But I don't think you have that luxury in XP.
Actually, I don't see how where it says to disable it. It says you can select the type to perform automatically. You can select an action to perform.
Yeah, what is the action to perform?
I mean, it's got a bunch of different things. Copy disk, manage music.
Are they check boxes?
No, it just says one thing. You can either choose select action to perform or prompt me each time to choose an action.
Everything I'm finding for Windows XP says that you've got to go into the regedit, either via Tweak UI or something else. I'm not finding many hits at all. I'm not finding
any
hits
Tweak
on the
UI,
other.
If you use Tweak UI, we'll definitely let you do it. Do a search for a program called Tweak UI.
Yeah.
And install that. That lets you customize a whole bunch of things with the Windows interface. I actually think there is a way to do it. I wish I had XP on this machine. But download Tweak UI, and that will allow you to turn off autoplay without editing the registry.
All right. I'll give it a shot.
All right.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually in Vista there is a control panel module for autoplay. So it's actually right out in front. All right, who's next?
Length of hold, we've got Anwar. Hey,
hello,
Anwar.
Hello, Anwar.
Hi. How you doing?
Pretty good.
I just wanted to know if I, by mistake, deleted some important emails from Gmail or Yahoo, either one. Is there any way I could retrieve them?
Well, if you deleted them from Gmail, you can go into the trash folder. Did you delete them from the trash folder?
I'm afraid so, yes.
Well, then I think it's gone.
Oh, they're gone forever.
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I tried all those things, even searching it, and there was no luck. So I figured I'd give you guys a call.
Now, I think, actually, that it is stored on Gmail servers, because I've read details on kind of how they store and save files. They have various backups, but I don't know of any way to get them back to you. But you know, if you can find an email address for Google Help, you might be able to ask them about it. But I think once it's gone, it's gone.
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks for your help. Mm-hmm. Okay, bye-bye.
And who's next?
All right, by Link the Fold, we've got Andy.
Andy.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Enjoying your show. I have a question concerning video editing.
All right.
I've recently purchased a high-def camcorder, and I'd like to embark upon some video editing, and I was wondering if you could recommend a software program, a video editing program, and or programs. And also, I'm using a Dell Inspiron 2.8 gigahertz with 2 gig of RAM, and wondered if that's an okay system or if I need to look at upgrading.
Well, the hardware is fine. I mean, that's, you know, that's a lot of RAM. What kind of processor is it?
I think it's an Intel, but 2.8 gigahertz.
Oh, that's pretty respectable. You should be fine with that. How much you want to spend for the software?
Well, I'm looking for a range. You know, I don't want to be on the bleeding edge, but I'm also not looking for super high quality. I just want to be able to capture the detail that's available in high def. And what I mean by I'm not interested in super high quality, I'm not really interested in any of the fancy visual effects or anything like that.
So you don't want something as heavy duty or as expensive as Adobe Premiere?
Okay, I'm not familiar with what's out there. So
how much is Vegas?
I'm not familiar with that one. What is
it? It's from SoundForge, although they got bought by Sony or somebody.
Oh, right. That's the same folks who did Acid, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But it's a video editor. Yeah. I don't know how much that costs, but it's probably cheaper than Adobe Premiere. Right.
And that would capture high definition?
Yes. Well, any of the modern ones right now will do high definition. There's Pinnacle Software makes a decent one. Probably the best known one for consumers is Easy Media Creator from Roxio.
Uh-huh.
And it's a suite of things. It has audio, it has video, it allows you to burn audio CDs and make DVDs. So that one runs about $70.
Oh, that's pretty reasonable. So that would
I think there's
me,
also
like,
one from ULEAD.
Download off of the tape onto a hard drive and then edit it and then burn it onto a DVD.
Yep. Peter had a suggestion.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one from ULEAD. I don't know if he can hear me very well. I can barely hear him. But ULEAD makes a video editor, and I know that they've had other products that were very good. So I would look up whatever video editor they have and see what... See what it, how it works.
That's ULEAD?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, great. Well, I appreciate the information.
Right. Thanks, Andy.
There's also a version of Premiere that's aimed at consumers called Premiere Elements. And it uses the same interface as Adobe Premiere, which is kind of the high-end professional editing software for Windows. And I think it's available for the Mac still, isn't it? Premiere?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But
although the Macs come with software that, if to do basic stuff, you can...
Right.
Yeah, iMovie.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, I think on Vista, Windows Movie Maker will handle HD. But it's really basic. Okay. Who's next?
Link the Fold. We've got Greg.
Hello, Greg.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. What's up?
All right. Hey, I just wanted to tell you all that y'all do a great job. I know you told that a lot, but you know, I'm also in the field, and it never fails. Every time I listen to the show, regardless, I'm always learning something from you guys. So you're helping me with my job, and you're helping me entertain me too, because y'all are pretty damn funny. can I say that on the air?
Yes, you can say that. You can say it several times, in fact.
The reason I'm calling is I do desktop support for a company. I also do a lot of side work, and I had a user tonight that had a problem that I just couldn't fix, and it bugs me, and I hate that. So I thought I'd run it by you guys and see what you think.
Yeah, we don't mind. We're used to that. So
okay. Essentially, he had a spyware infection, and so. You know, I ran the normal tools, Adware, Spybot, and with the updates, Shredder, Those are some of the better ones, I think. And it cleaned up almost everything. The one thing it didn't do, though, is the gentleman used to use Academic Planet. This is a dial-up service that for educational-oriented people, for, you know, teachers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, strangely enough, academicplanet.com keeps hijacking the browser somehow. I don't know if that's what's causing it, but essentially, if you, when you go to change the homepage and you click apply, you're good. You can browse around, you can click on the home icon, it goes back to the correct homepage. But as soon as you shut the browser down and relaunch, it goes back to Academic Planet. The strange thing is he had a dial-up networking account rather than some Academic Planet software installed, so it's kind of odd. I don't know. I couldn't figure out a way to fix that.
What were the programs that you said you installed on it for fixing the spyware?
I used the latest version of SpyBot, Search and Destroy, Adaware, the free version, and I used CW Shredder.
Okay, SpyBot has a feature in it that will lock down the page for your startup for your browser, and it's possible that when you ran and installed SpyBot Search and Destroy, if you turned on this kind of protection feature that's in it, that that was the default at the time, and now when you try to change it, it sees that as a hijack and reverts it. So you might look in the settings for SpyBot to see if that's in there.
You know, I bet you hit it right on the head. I bet you're exactly right.
In other words, you're having anti-spyware software that's behaving like spyware software.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's quite an astute observation. I actually, it was funny because I mentioned to him that it's behaving as though
it's protecting Academic Planet.
Yeah, as though Academic Planet has some software on there that was trying to circumnavigate browsers that might come hijacks that might come along, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, wow, what a big oversight on my part, huh?
Well, there's two pieces in SpyBot. There's this protection feature, and there's also a little program that runs called T-Timer that does even more than that. And so if you turn T-Timer on, try that, turning that off first, and then going in and looking in the settings to see if you can turn off that protection feature.
Uh-huh. Very fine. Well, geez, that's great, man. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right,
and,
thank you.
To all those people that are out there listening to the radio show today and learning and appreciating your show, don't forget to listen next week and, more importantly, to call in and support the station because you can't find this stuff anywhere else.
All right. That's great.
We said it better ourselves.
That's right. All thank right. you.
Okay, thanks. Have a nice night.
You too. See, and Pledge Drive has started early, 1 week early.
I'd forgotten that it was Pledge Drive coming up.
And now you're reminded, aren't you?
You blanked it out.
All right. Well, we've got three calls. We have 15 minutes. We'll give out the number again. If we can get to you, we will, but there's no guarantee. 713-526-5738. By length of hold?
I think this is the right name. A group might have gotten a little bit off. Is it Kidway?
Yeah, that's it. Perfect.
All right.
My question is this. I've been trying to get software to back up my DVDs and copy them to DVDs that I can hide from children and other irresponsible adults that watch my movies from my regular DVDs, then leave them out the package. You know where I'm going with this.
Yeah?
And
hopefully don't scratch.
I have one, but it was awfully slow. But it would record, it would back up the whole DVD to another DVD, and I could put it away for a rainy day, or if the other one gets destroyed. I was told that Nero, get the new Nero, and it would do the same thing but faster. And I've actually seen a Nero program, but it was Nero 6.0. And I got the newest one, and some of the times it don't copy. Is there another program that's better than that
that will populate all and back up all my DVDs that I may not be aware of? Or do y'all have something online that I can go look at and get some glean some information from?
Actually, one of the best sites I've seen in a while, and I just went out to see if it's still current, is doom9.org. And it's kind of branded as the definitive DVD backup source, and I go there for everything from, you know, backing up, like, music to waves to, you know, full system backups on production, you know, server boxes. They kind of cater to everyone in between, everything from, you know, you wanted to back up music or videos all the way up. And they've got a number of FACs out there, and they also have a download link that'll get you, you know, both, you know, commercial software that you can purchase as well as some stuff that's free out there.
Okay. Because right now, for what I paid for the Nero, I'm looking for free stuff now.
Yeah, the problem is that DVDs are copy protected, and there actually are different types of copy protection on some of them. For example, Sony just got into trouble with some of its HD DVDs with copy protection that was so bungled that it wouldn't play on some players, including some Sony players.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so copy protection is evil on several levels, and you've just run into one area with it. But yeah, Barrett's Doom9.org, is that it?
Yeah, and if you go there, if you click on the download section, they'll have links to everything from audio tools to, you know, codecs to descrambling and ripping tools, to decoders, to, you know, DivX, to filters, to whatever you want, really. Media players, region-free tools. I think you're going to have a lot of fun.
Okay, it's Doom9.org.
Yes, D-O-O-M, 9, like N-I-N-E, but the number, niner.org.
Okay, I got it. Hey, thanks, y'all.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Yeah, I think we can take some more calls. 713-526-5738.
Okay, next up, we've got Frank.
Hello, Frank.
Hello. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Good.
How about you? You must not be doing so good because you're calling us.
Hey, but I do want to echo the other caller's comment about gleaning a lot of good information from your show and making sure to support during fund drives. So I'll make a note of it, make sure that I get you guys credit.
Oh, excellent.
On my next pledge.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
But real quickly, I wanted to follow up on an online conversation on your blog about wireless mesh networking.
Mm-hmm. On my blog?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to see if you had, you know, gotten any, you know, background information on how effective that type of Wi-Fi, that type of city, at least a neighborhood-wide wireless network, because I know that Meraki took the project from the MIT RoofNet project, and they're trying to roll it out in a couple of cities, but I think, you know, only San Francisco is the first one to try it, and it just kind of, you know, wondering, had you heard anything else on that mesh networking?
Anytime you kind of mention mesh networking, like in the wireless community, especially when it comes down to like municipal mesh networking projects, like the one in Milwaukee you mentioned, or the one that's coming up here in Houston, a lot of people kind of roll their eyes and, you know, doom them to failure. In the past, the problem has been, you know, they'll come in, they'll do a build out and do an entire city build out. It's usually prohibitively expensive. It's very expensive. So the people that come in and do it first, they get out there and it turns out that most people don't want to pay a lot extra, you know, for a second place. They'll pay for broadband at home, but they don't necessarily want to pay for, you know, a citywide subscription service. So as a result, you know, these networks, they don't have the money, they usually don't get supported very well, and they don't have, you know, the funding, they don't have the tons of people pouring money into the coffers of these, you know, companies that, you know, do the startups. So they usually fail. The big difference here with the one that's going into the city of Houston is that the city of Houston, I think, has signed a contract saying that the city will be one of the customers of the Wi-Fi network. So what you've got is you've got some guaranteed revenue stream that's going to be going, you know, from the city back in there. They're going to be using the Wi-Fi network for things like parking meters, for controlling the city parking lights and things like that. And the other thing, too, even though they've got a two-year project kind of based on everything, they're going to try and get, you know, the entire Houston area in 2 years. They do already have some of that in place. A lot of that area is going to be downtown along the rail line, and they're going to be lighting that up first. The other nice thing, too, is with the Houston one, it looks like the price points are looking kind of good. In other projects, you know, I've seen them as high as, you know, $15, $20, $30 a month. It looks like there's going to be a baseline of around $15 per month for people here in Houston. And then if you can show that you're disadvantaged or in some certain areas, you can get a discount on that. And the city has stipulated that a lot of, like, free areas like parks, you know, city buildings, libraries, things like that, that they can't charge for that either. So all in all, as far as, you know, municipal mesh networks go, the one that's going to be built out in Houston is, you know, one of the bright and shining ones. Now, whether or not it actually takes off, you know, we still kind of have to see. You know, the city of Houston doesn't have the best track record with technology rollouts like SimDesk a few years ago and other things like that. But I've got my fingers crossed.
It has potential.
Well, what do you think, Dwight? I know you made a mention that if it's not free, you don't think that it's going to work?
Well, no. What I said was it needs to be inexpensive, it needs to be reliable, and it needs to be robust. And if it's not all three of those things, then it's not, you know, people will not use it. And that's the pitfall that that Barrett mentioned, is that if people aren't willing to put money into it, it's not. My personal feeling is that this is the kind of thing that the city should have built out and paid for, and it should just be free. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm willing to pay for this kind of thing with my tax dollars. Other people disagree. I would have loved to have seen a vote on it. And at the very least, even if a vote didn't pass, it would have gotten people talking about it and would have raised the profile of wireless networking in Houston to the point that once we did, you know, if we were to launch it, more people would know about it and would be interested in using it. And, I just have a feeling that the great unwashed masses are not going to be interested in using this, may not even be aware it's there.
Yeah, and, you know, my interest is the lower income neighborhoods and the underserved where you can't get DSL and cable is, you know, a little cost prohibitive for some household, and to see if there's a solution that can be done for those neighborhoods. So, but I think it's an interesting conversation, and I'm just hoping that, you know, Houston, you know, does the right thing.
Well, I'm going to be writing a lot about it, and the Chronicle is going to be doing a lot of things about it. So keep an eye on what we're doing. You know, one issue with the disadvantaged areas is that they have to have the hardware in order to access it. And so, you know, one of the plans I hope that the city is looking at is ways to get computers with wireless connections into the hands of folks who might not normally be able to afford them.
Yeah.
That's a big issue.
Yeah, but it's a great issue to tackle, because I think it'll help bridge that digital divide. And again, I will definitely keep reading your blog and keep reading the Houston Chronicle and keep listening to the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Frank. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
Uh-huh. All right. Okay, we have about 5 minutes. I think we have to do this one more call, and that ought to do it, don't you think?
I think so.
All right.
Edgar.
Edgar, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Don't ruin it for us. We've been doing really good, so don't throw us a softball here.
We're on the glide path.
Okay, well, my question, I hope I can present it. My question is that I had a internet service provider for years, and I canceled that provider, and I got another internet service provider. Can I mention the name of the internet service provider?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I had DCNet 2000, and then I went to PeoplePC. Okay, after going to PeoplePC, you know, I got them loaded on and everything. And whenever I go into my PeoplePC homepage and decide to go to the internet or to try and pull something up on the computer, it continues to pull the page up with DCNet on it.
Oh, you mean your homepage in the browser?
Internet Explorer.
The PeoplePC homepage comes up.
Uh-huh.
But whenever I decide to go into the browser,
uh-huh,
at the very top line up there says it's DCNet.
DCNet branded browser or something like that. What do you think, Dwight?
Yeah, it's possible that when you when you first signed up with DCNet, it gave you, did they give you a package of software to install?
No. No, I think he did everything over the phone.
Was PeoplePC taken over? I'm sorry. Was DCNet taken over by PeoplePC? Is that how you went with them?
No. I got some information in the mail, a disk in the mail or whatever, and then I went ahead and went to PeoplePC.
Well, it sounds like you have some kind of software, some kind of plug-in in the browser that's causing that across the top. I would suggest looking in Add Remove Programs to see if there's any kind of program in there that makes reference to...
Looking into what now?
Add Remove Programs in the Windows Control Panel.
Add new programs.
Add and remove programs. It's a part of the control panel. We've run out of time, unfortunately, so we're going to have to take off and make way for the next show.
Feel free to email Jay, though, if you'd like to.
Email Jay@geekradio.com.
Jay at geekradio.
Spyware cause that?
No, spyware would not
probably
cause
not,
that.
No.
All right. Thank you, now.
All right, thanks.
All right, well, you have been listening to Technology Bites.
You
I'm Peter Hughes.
It.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Dwight.
And next week we'll be back at full strength. And is it Fun Drive again already?
Yeah, I believe it is. And
I think it might be.
Okay, coming up next is Focus on Personal Growth.
Cool. So,
it's not that hard.
Yeah, right. Dude.
Save up your pennies and be ready for next week, and we'll be back at full strength. And I don't know. Stay dry.
All right.
Goodbye.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Phenomena.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.